Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 259. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Coming up, we've got a packed show here on 259, and we're going to be talking about Bryce Harper, Manny Machado, the Annie McPhail News Conference, a third base battle in spring training. Liz and I will go round and round on that one coming up here in a few minutes. Gabe Kapler wants to have his players police the locker room a little bit more this year. We'll talk about whether or not that's a good idea and maybe get into some Rob Manfred stuff about the labor strife going on right now in baseball. So lots to get to, and joining me are my pals who normally join me every Sunday night. First, you know him as the head guy from The Good Fight, Justin Clue. He's also one half of the podcast duo who puts out The Dirty Inning with Dr. Trevor Strunk, taking a look at the worst innings in Phillies history. You can follow Justin on Twitter at Justin_Clue. Hey, pal, how's it going, man? Are you have you gotten over all the John Heyman nonsense?
I just want to say that I'm not better than most things, and certainly I'm the first to admit that. But at the same time, I will say that I did not buy into that blip of activity we had today on the free agent front whatsoever.
No.
Just for the record, no butterflies in the stomach. No, this could be it. I went through the motions with everybody at The Good Fight. We talked about, look, if this is something, then are we prepared? And we are, as we have been for months. But at no point did I think that something was actually going to happen. So you didn't get me, John Heyman, Bryce Harper, and the horrible gods who have allowed this to go on as long as it has. So I'm
congratulations.
Winning. I'm ahead of you.
I think it's great that you gave credit to John Heyman, because I know they were tweeted from his account, but I'm pretty sure Scott Boras took his phone.
I'm pretty sure John Heyman is alone in a cabin with just a lit cigarette in his mouth, banging out tweets on a typewriter and then telegraphing them in to whoever's tweeting them out for him. And he's just been there alone and delirious for the entire offseason. And today was probably his all work and no play makes Jack a dull
boy moment. Yeah, Liz Rocher from Yahoo Sports. Follow Liz on Twitter at Liz Rocher. She and Justin also bring you continued success every week. Liz, the Heyman stuff. Heyman was going full Heyman today, wasn't he?
He was. He tweeted a lot and said very, very little. He tweeted... it's classic Heyman. It's what we all know and love, him for. So
Well, here's the funny thing. Matt Carey at Real Matt Carey did a couple of screenshots just of some Heyman tweets from today. Let me run these down for you. 7 hours ago, he wrote, or as we're recording this here on Sunday night, so this is all within the span of about 4 hours, 3 hours. Heyman writes, things are heating up with Harper. Intensified is the word I heard. Phillies are the favorite, but word remains that nothing's done yet. Will be a long-term deal. And then an hour later, Heyman tweets, as things heat up, here Harper is talking to other teams beyond Philly, and Philly is still talking to both Harper and Machado. Feels like Philly-Harper is the most likely match at this point, though. Then an hour later, Heyman checks in with, Harper talks with Phillies appear to be intensifying, but no word anything's done. And to this point, it seems other interested teams haven't been told they are out. That includes Padres, Nats, Giants, Chi Sox, multiple mystery teams. And then 3 hours after that tweet, Heyman checks in once again. As things intensify, Bryce Harper has multiple long-term offers for more than $30 million a year. Philly is viewed as the favorite, as said here. But it is also said to an evolving market. And then 2 hours after that, Heyman, his final tweet so far as we're recording this, says, while the Phillies have made progress and are seen as the favorite for Harper, especially with the self-proclaimed stupid money, several teams are said to still involved. Again, I'm just reading it as Heyman wrote it, including both the Giants and Padres. That is all.
Chills.
I think my dramatic rendering of it really helped to bring it home. But Justin, these are the tweets of Scott Boras. This is not John Heyman. This is Scott Boras. But nevertheless, and I know you weren't sucked in today like everyone else. I mean, you were on this. You were dogged in your refusal to believe that this was actual real news coming down today. But we are starting, I think, to see a lot of smoke about some stuff coming together tomorrow, because it's not just Heyman. Jim Bowden, Bob Nightingale, the last couple of days have seemed to say that it's getting closer, that things are intensifying. We've upped the Good Fight DEFCON to 1.5 now, so I think that's important to note. But I think all agree that the Phillies are in deep negotiations at the very least with Harper and generally seen as the favorites. So what is your honest take on where we are right now with Bryce Harper in Philadelphia? Was today just another day full of nonsense, or do you really think that finally here, as we sit on February 17th recording this podcast, that maybe we're nearing the end?
No, I don't think we're any closer than we necessarily were yesterday. No, I don't think there's any reason to believe that. And one of the things that this offseason has taught us are the levels of who tweets something out that should be taken seriously. And we have not seen a tweet or any bit of information from someone further along than the outermost levels of communication of baseball media for some time now. I think the reason today was significant was because who was it? Andy Martino
I believe is where Martino's from.
People got excited because David Sampson said something, but he was apparently referencing a fake article that had been tweeted out by a fake account.
Former and then MLB executive, folks. That,
he was a team president. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yep. And John, you mentioned the triumvirate of Heyman, Nightingale, and Bowden, and there's just not a voice in the bunch there that's worth listening to at this point. So we're just kind of at a point where the only thing that could happen next is a signature on a piece of paper and being told about that. There's nothing else to look forward to. If you want to believe in anything that you hear from any of those three or any of the little blips of nothingness, like, oh, the Phillies gift shop staff was told to come in tomorrow when they actually were supposed to have it off. If you want to buy any of that, then like, okay, if you're having fun, go for it. But I'm out. Like, I'm ready to just have it be the news. And until that happens, we're going to have to deal with, reporters. I've actually very much enjoyed watching different reporters break over the course of this of this offseason. And one little fun subplot was, was it yesterday or the day before? Thomas Boswell, the Washington Post, wrote an article that included a section where an anonymous Nationals veteran player basically made it sound like the Nationals were going to be well off without Bryce Harper, better off without him. Well, actually, what's absurd about it is that it was clearly like a passage that this writer like read to a player and then had him confirm. So the player didn't actually say any of it, but it was just stuff about him like dogging it on a ground ball or on a pop up or missing his cutoff man by 15 feet and how that can have a negative impact on your team, especially when you're the face of the team. And it was this really like anti kind of Bryce Harper paragraph from not only the newspaper in the city that he's coming from, but also Thomas Boswell, who's a pretty big national super fan. And then you contrast that with Howard Eskin today tweeting at Bryce Harper, demanding answers and like just an unbelievable display of just stupidity. Like it was just like, hey, yeah, the place he's leaving is already saying like, you know what, we're fine without you. And the place he could be coming to is like screaming and shouting at him exactly what he's probably, what he would be reluctant to accept a Philadelphia contract for, to have to deal with stuff like that. Yeah, it's just everybody's got their best foot forward right now, it feels like. It's great. It's been real fun to watch.
Yeah, Liz, we're all broken right now. And you're right, Boswell. I mean, what a coward, like this Nats player I don't know who's more coward. Like Boswell talking to this unnamed Nats player about the piece that he's writing and saying that the Nats, and then the Nats said, write it. But yeah, don't mention my name. I don't want anybody to know that it was me that told you to write it. But I guess it is a little different than the player volunteering all that and then saying, write it, but don't say my name. A little bit of difference. But yeah, that...
I just want to say that Boswell's previous column to that one was a pretty in-depth profile-ish piece on Max Scherzer. So I want to say that I think without a shadow of a doubt that my guess would be that was probably Max Scherzer he was talking to.
Nice.
Yeah.
Real
yeah,
nice.
I think... wouldn't surprise me at all. But Liz, I mean, yeah, we've reached hysteria port. I mean, we had people tracking a private plane from Las Vegas to Clearwater today, trying to figure out if it was a Phillies plane and keeping an eye on the airports to see if anybody spotted Bryce Harper when it landed in Clearwater. And
we not all have lives.
No, we don't. Apparently, we don't. We've all been on our phones all day looking at this because there was speculation. People were going crazy about rumors that the sales staff was being told to come into President's Day on Monday. And Todd Zielecki shot that down, basically saying just it's a couple of interns.
Really? But, wow.
Yeah, I mean, this is the lunacy we've reached. We've reached a point of utter lunacy with all of this.
I can't believe it's taken this long to get to flight tracking, to be honest. That seemed like a first move.
When you feel yourself looking at one of those tweets and thinking, yeah, this could really be something. If you feel yourself going to a website and searching for something like a flight, like a plane number or a flight plan or literally anything that could be considered strange or weird, just stop, put the phone down, step away from your computer, go outside, look at your children, your husband, your wife, your
dog. Why
are
they outside?
Your own hands. I don't know. Look at anything. Look at anything else. Think of anything else. Move on with your life. We all have to do this. Otherwise, everything will end. We'll all die.
No one's going to give anyone who by some miracle of God found a plane that actually was carrying Bryce Harper and landing somewhere that hadn't been reported yet. No one is going to credit you with breaking that story.
Right.
There are other.
You're not getting your. It's not like you're getting a reward for returning like a lost wallet. It's not. there's no scenario in which you get a full time job out of that.
Right.
You know. I mean, there's. So I agree. Yeah, it's people just want to know. People are desperate to know. And I do think we're closer today. I do think that at this point, and I think logically it makes sense because I don't think there are going to be any new teams stepping forward. I think all the teams that have shown that they're serious about this have come forward. So now it's a matter of, okay, let's figure out what each team is willing to do. And, you know, are the Phillies willing to go 10 years and $330 million? How far are the Padres willing to go? We're hearing the Padres are getting super aggressive. Bob Nightingale, again, who tweets out a lot of nonsense, actually had some actual reporting on the Padres and reported that they have an offer to Machado for 8 years and $240 million. Some have heard that the offer is as much as $280 million. At least those are some specific years and numbers that he's relaying there. But again, another Heyman tweet that I didn't even mention. He was reporting that the Padres have offered that kind of money and also money similar to that to Harper, and that they're making a hard push for Harper too. So the Padres seem to be making a big push here.
It's really just down to the Phillies, and I don't know. Yeah, if someone else is in on this, then they've been in it before now. No one else is jumping in here. And no, I'm not particularly scared of the Giants or the Padres or anybody who showed up late. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not even really that scared of him signing somewhere else. I don't even mean like I'm scared that it would be more likely that he would do it. I'm not even scared of him actually doing it, because at the end of the day, it still means this is over. You know, obviously the Phillies won't have as good a team, and we'll have something else to talk about, which will be, you know, how did this happen? How did they miss on Bryce Harper? Was it their fault? Was it a choice of his? Yeah, but at the end of the day, at least we won't be having this conversation anymore. The Phillies will obviously not be as good without him, but you know, at least we know what cards we were holding. At least, you know, at that point, I don't think anything's going to change now, other than what team Bryce Harper is going to be on. Like, and that's what this has been about since the beginning, and we've just had to break it into all these little fragments just to entertain ourselves. But at this point, it's just, you know, there's one more chapter in this story. It just might take a couple hundred more pages to get there.
All right. Well, let me ask you guys flat out. Liz, does it end this week?
No.
No.
Oh, God.
It doesn't end this week. No. And I have a hard time believing the Padres have offered that. Nah. That seems like a lot of money for him. From them. Like, I think it's a great, I have no objection to it being offered. I just don't think they did it. Like, they're already, I don't see it. I don't see it. It's the Padres. I don't know why they would do that.
Well,
do
they have.
Know? Does anyone else know?
They have a lot of young talent that they expect to be ready in a year or two. And when you've got, when these guys are so young, they're 26 years old, you figure, okay, here's a guy that's going to be a part of our established core, and we will bring in the pieces from our farm system and build around him. That seems to make sense to me, but whether or not the Padres have the actual financial ability to do that, playing in a small market, playing in front of a fan base that really just doesn't care all that much. I mean, San Diego's too busy enjoying the beach to really care about baseball. They don't ever draw a ton of money. So, you know, and they've already got a big contract out with Eric Hosmer that is kind of eating away at them. So I do think there are times you make exceptions, and I think these two guys are guys you would make exceptions for. And I could see it make, I will say, for, it makes more sense for the Padres and the White Sox to make aggressive offers on these guys just for that reason. They have a slew of super duper top prospects who are close to the majors who could come in and make those two very exciting teams. Whereas a team like the Giants never made any sense for either one of those guys because they're on the downslope and they are years away from getting back into this thing. So I think the Padres, but I mean, I don't know. The Phillies can blow either deal out of the water. We've talked about it a million times. Today felt like we were getting somewhere. But now as I reread all the Heyman tweets, the Boris tweets, maybe it was a mirage. And then, or maybe tomorrow on Monday night, we're doing a bonus podcast and announcing Bryce Harper is coming to Philadelphia, but you guys are pessimists.
Now that's
and
definitely not happening.
And I don't, and you just are bumming me out seriously big time here. So let's move on. And let's
we can do better. We can help you, John. Don't worry.
Yes, yeah, we'll get there.
Let's shift topics.
Let's not talk about this anymore.
let's move on. Well, let's talk about Andy McPhail. And that's definitely a way to improve our mood. Let's talk about the riveting Andy McPhail news conference from this
ray
week.
Of sunshine.
Oh, yeah. All over the place. So McPhail said some words to the public. People asked him questions and he was obligated to answer. He was about as exciting as a wet washcloth. Specifically talking about Harper and Machado, he was asked a couple of times if not getting one of them would make the season a failure. And of course, he said, of course not. You know, it's not about. Just those guys, that the Phillies are better, that the Phillies have improved on offense and defense. He noted that the bullpen is specifically much better with David Robertson. Their ability to get lefties out will be better with him and James Pazos. I still don't know how to pronounce his last name, and Jose Alvarez. And, one of the other things that he said was talking about the attendance. He said game ticket sales are 150,000 ahead of where they were at this point last year. And he said, the way it has been explained to me is that it's good, but not great, which of course led to everyone on Twitter and in unison shouting, I know a way to make it better. I don't know those are just a couple of the things that he was talking about in that news conference. Also talked about, that they have to weigh everything each player brings to the table, that their team is uniquely poised right now to add either one of those guys. What's that?
Sorry, I just muttered the phrase uniquely poised sarcastically to myself and forgot that I hadn't muted myself.
Well, no, I think it's okay to verbalize these things on a podcast. So go ahead.
Yeah. So you said he gave about as much information as a wet blanket or what. I mean, that was very much his intention, was to go out there. Just fill the world with fill the room with a cloud of words, which he did.
And
that first 10 minutes, he really just made it clear that he wasn't there to talk about anything real, listing all the amenities that his front office has been there to provide the Phillies with, all the new stuff, which is all like, yeah, it's great that this franchise has come along so that they now have a team chef. He bothered to mention that. All the fun new renovations at the ballpark, you know, they got a Shake Shack by the third base gate now. All that stuff that he listed it for he went on a very long time talking about. That was all there to just do PR work for the Phillies. So that was part of his job. And then he really didn't hesitate to make himself sound completely detached. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but the first time he was asked the question about, like, what's the deal with Bryce Harper? What's going on? He said the phrase, like, when something like that happens, I'll be the last to know, or something like to that.
Yeah,
effect.
What's that all
he
about?
He said, like, look, I don't pretend to be a Philly guy. I'm, like, not here a lot of the time. You know, he really went out of his way to make it seem like I don't know anything. So, like, maybe it was an effort for them to not ask him more questions, to make it seem like, look, I don't know anything anyway. that obviously wasn't going to work. So he really just positioned himself to look distant, out of touch, frustratingly unaware. I guess nobody thought you were going to get a ton of new information there, but that was just such a sad PR nothing move that positioned him so strangely among the Phillies organization. It made you wonder, like, what is your job, sir?
Well, like, he made it clear where his interest is. It's in the 10 minutes he droned on and on about ballpark amenities.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yet he also can't completely explain how the ticket situation works. And he seems detached from baseball operations. He completely admitted at an earlier press conference last year, or maybe the year before, that he pushed off all of the baseball operations stuff. That's, I mean, at least the player-related on-field stuff, that's all Matt Klentak. Making deals, anything like that, that's all him. He does not interfere in what the GM does.
I got the impression that
he said that a couple of times, and I'm just like, well, I guess now that we know it's true, because he's really wants to make the ballpark a great experience for the people who come there to watch, not Bryce Harper.
I got the impression that, like, being the Phillies team president, Andy McPhail, take it or leave it. Not really, like, super into his job right now. Maybe thinking about the next thing he's going to do. I didn't get the impression that this was somebody who's, like, passionately working to get the biggest free agent deal in team history done. I don't think that matters to him. He didn't. He certainly
did. His job is to make money for the owner.
Exactly. He didn't sound
like.
And
that's what he's passionate about.
Mm-hmm. He didn't sound like he cared one bit at all, other than, about that. Yeah, exactly.
Stop putting him in front of a microphone.
We got nothing. It's like the same. It's like watching John Heyman tweet. There's nothing we're going to learn as an audience from hearing this man speak. There's nothing. And all he's doing is frustrating people. If you think he went up there and laid out all these amenities, all the things they've done for the team, if they bring up one more time that this team improved by 14 wins last year, yeah, we know, but it's an arbitrary point when neither of those teams is a playoff team anyway. So, like, people don't want to see that you're a little further along. They want to see that you're done building. Like, they want the project to be over so that there can be a team happening again. If you want to pat yourself on the back for a team that improved by 14 wins, yeah, I mean, that's a fun way to put that. But again, we're talking about a 66 win team and an 80 win team, neither of whom went to the postseason. So, like, maybe don't be too happy with that yet.
Some of it was disingenuous. I mean, there was a couple of things where, you know, he that particular thing, for example, he also talked about the Phillies going out and improving themselves at first base by removing Carlos Santana in a trade and promoting Rhys Hoskins. And
credit for that. You don't. That's not how that works.
Right. No, that was self-inflicted. And, you know, he did this at the beginning of the offseason too. He went out of his way to throw cold water on free agency this offseason in order to lower expectations. And I think he's doing the same thing again this time. And no one wants to hear it. I'm sorry. You sound exactly like you said, Justin, detached. You sound like you don't give a crap. And that's just, why would you go out of your way to say, well, I've never really been a Philly guy, you know? Like, do you want the fans to detest you? I mean, McPhail's never in front of people, so it doesn't really matter, I guess, in the grand scheme of things. And hey, listen, if being secretive and, you know, handling it this way helps them get Bryce Harper or Manny Machado, then fine. Maybe I don't know what I'm talking about. But, you know, a lot of it was just a lot of that news conference was a lot of, you know, talking out of one side of his mouth and really just bumming everybody out. And I don't need him to be rah-rah and all that stuff. But the other thing he said was talking about the free agent market and the slow offseason. He was asked about the economic state of the game. And he was saying, well, if you look at last year and when a lot of the big free agents signed, most of the big money free agents didn't happen until between February 14th and the start of the season. So, okay, we're looking at this offseason and comparing it only to last offseason, an offseason in which everybody thought that the owners were colluding because for the first time in history, nobody wanted to sign any free agents whatsoever. So we don't look at this year's free agent class in terms of overall baseball history. We're looking at just 1 year ago and comparing it to 1 year ago. That was another instance when I thought, Liz, that he was disingenuous quite a bit.
The whole thing made me so angry. Like, you look back, there is, who is this dude's analog in the last administration? It was David Montgomery. They had no Andy McPhail, I don't believe. They
no, you're have, right.
Yeah, because they, John Middleton hired a dude to come between him and the GM. He hired a guy who would do that stuff because David Montgomery, I think, was very hands-on. He did a lot of stuff. He had an actual job.
Yeah.
And Andy McPhail has taken over some of that because John Middleton is a, you know, trillionaire who does not want to do those things. And that's fine. But you can't, I can't imagine David Montgomery coming out and doing that. I can't imagine Matt Klentak coming out and saying, Ruben Amaro saying some of the things that Matt Klentak has said. Like, it's just so different. And granted, that's what we wanted and that's what we've got. But, you know, their job is not to make us happy or excited. Their job is to actually get done, but then maybe don't have them speak to the press. Maybe don't televise it. Maybe don't make it so I can see it or anyone can see it. Maybe just never have them speak to anyone ever again. You cannot ask those corporate types questions about the baseball labor market. They're not going to give you an honest answer. They're just not. His job is to save money for the owner so the owner can take more home. So he's not going to give an honest answer about how the labor market is going. None of them are. None of them are going to give an honest answer. So don't ask unless whoever is asking is prepared to actually make a, you know, actually say something about it. There are all these questions asked and there's no, it's like, let's ask a question. He gives them his answer and then that's the end of it. Oh, okay. Well, then you think something that's completely demonstrably untrue. Like, why are we not challenging him on that?
Yeah. No, that's a good point. And Justin, remind me who it was that said something, you know, what maybe gave a little bit too much truth today. He was talking about, you know, what did he say? Something along the lines of, you know, I never said that we would be, that we would spend money, that we would just be financially flexible.
Braves.
Oh, yeah, that's right. It was the Braves GM, right?
Mm-hmm. Let's have a look. Let me see if I can remember. Craig Calcaterra over at NBC Sports, who is a Braves fan, lost his mind over this. This is an article in The Athletic with some Braves executives earlier in the week. And he essentially, they came within a hair's breadth of saying, we're not in this for winning. We're in this for money. Just saying, yeah. We didn't say we wanted to win. We wanted to be financially flexible. Like, it's really... If their goal isn't to win, then what is it?
Right.
If it's to be financially flexible, then at least be honest and stop pretending.
It feels unprecedented for a team to actually admit our intention wasn't to win. I remember a long time ago watching a very bad Orioles team play. It was probably the Yankees. And somebody had one player had dragged their feet to come out. For the start of the game or somebody had, there'd been some issue with somebody not wanting to play because it was late in the season and the Orioles sucked. And I remember Gary Thorne, the Orioles play-by-play guy, who's probably my favorite play-by-play guy in baseball, was talking about this. And he said, fact of the matter is you come out here to win a ball game. And that was the kind of general consensus of look, I know I'm the Orioles announcer. We're watching this Orioles team lose 95 games or whatever. It's late in the season. Nothing's going to come of this except the game that's happening on the field. But the point of all of this kind of falls apart if you're not out here to win. And that kind of balloons to a even more upsetting scale when you hear it out of the mouth of a general manager. If even they are giving up this the illusion that all these teams are out here to try to win, even if it's just laughed off, okay, yeah, sure, you're going to try to win again, Padres. Great. That's fantastic. Just to lose that is it's really damaging. It makes you feel like the whole thing could just unravel any minute. Why should we wear uniforms? Why should I have to hold the bat this way? Why can't I just throw it at the pitcher and run to first base? I don't know. It's surreal to have a GM so openly talk about, we didn't say we were here to win. We were here to be financially flexible. I love it.
Here's the exact quotes from Alex Anthropoulos. The question was, all we heard about the Braves' move to SunTrust is that it would drive a higher team payroll. Fans contend that the team promised as much. And Terry, the other dude who was there, said, you said the team would have money to spend, but it has been a relatively quiet winter. Please explain. And here's the answer from Alex Anthropoulos. Did we promise we were going to spend more money, or did we promise we were going to have more flexibility? Nobody is ever going to say we have to spend X amount.
Wow. If I were a Braves fan, I mean, at the very least, we're not hearing that kind of nonsense from the Phillies at this point. You know, I mean, we haven't seen them spend the stupid money thing, you know, but that could be coming. But as infuriating as Andy McPhail's news conference was, at least we haven't heard that kind of nonsense coming out of their faces.
Can I ask you guys this, though? Because this, I was talking about the Andy McPhail conference, and a guy replied to me on Twitter, and I feel like it was a point worth mentioning. I mean, he started saying, like, I don't know why this regime is held to some ridiculous standard when all they've done is orchestrate a pretty short-term rebuild, relatively speaking. This guy was giving them no credit for the Bryce Harper and Manny Machado sweepstakes, obviously. But he kind of reminded me that, you know, every time this team's made a deal of some kind this offseason, we've said it was a good deal. And there was a point where, you know, obviously the Real Muto trade is different because it was a trade and they traded their top prospect for him. But at the same time, you know, there was a point this offseason where we were saying the Phillies haven't made a bad move yet. Now, I don't want to give them too much credit, but just, you know, in contrast to so many other teams doing nothing, the Phillies really are the only team that is so aggressively trying to improve their team. And if we weren't in the middle of a free agency where Bryce Harper and Manny Machado were available, then they'd be doing the most, you know, possible at this point, it feels like. But this, this guy's named Joseph Kerr is kind of brought this up to me, and especially citing the Carlos Santana thing. Like, I didn't like how the Phillies were patting themselves on the back for that either, John, that they were saying, oh, we finally worked out Reese Hoskins' position, and apparently it's first base, when he was a first baseman before Carlos Santana got there. But at the same time, they acquired him. They acquired Santana with an idea in mind, thinking we're going to be a team that focuses on getting on base, and the runs will, you know, the offense will come from that. And it didn't work out. But they weren't so handcuffed to Santana that they weren't able to convert him into value in one of the best, if probably my favorite trade of the offseason so far, for Gene Segura in Seattle, that freed up the middle infield logjam and gave the Phillies an extra base hitting, slick defensive, full-time shortstop. So I don't know. I don't want to give them too much credit, again, because I'm as frustrated as anybody, and I certainly was even more frustrated after the McPhail conference. But it felt like a good point that was worth bringing up, that, you know, we have seen the Phillies do a ton of good stuff this offseason. Unfortunately, it's just not been the biggest good stuff that we've been waiting for.
That's a really good point. And I think that, yeah, I think that's a really good point. And I think, you know, we do tend to get a little too hard on the Phillies here, because you look at there's a Jason Stark piece out in The Athletic this week where they were where he traditionally every preseason polls different executives and front office people around the game and asking, you know, who did the most to improve themselves this year, and almost unanimously it was either the Reds or the Phillies, and the Phillies were at the top of everybody's list for the two best trades that were made this offseason. Most people around baseball love the JT Realmuto trade for the Phillies. I know for us it was a little bit harder to take because we have grown quite fond of Sixto Sanchez and the possibility that he could be a great pitcher at some point, but they have done some very good things. If there was no Bryce Harper or Manny Machado, like you said, Justin, this would have been a very successful offseason. And even if they don't get one of them, I can't say anymore that I think the offseason was a failure. I think their pursuit of these two guys will have been a failure, and it will turn what could be a great offseason into an okay offseason, a decent offseason. But I don't know. Go ahead.
If the Phillies were unable to convince Bryce Harper with money to come to Philadelphia, or didn't give him the highest offer, then it is a failure, inescapably. Absolutely. I can't shake from that. I think I stand by that it's too late, at least optics wise, for it to not be a failure, to not get either of these guys. And all those press conferences have been about are trying to balance the scales to let the Phillies off the hook if they don't land one of these guys, which nobody is too excited to lean in a positive direction about, certainly not Andy McPhail. So I have to say, I do think it is a failure for these guys to be available and the Phillies to be in the position they're in with the resources they have available. It is barring Bryce Harper just not wanting to play in Philadelphia and picking another place because of that. I don't see how it couldn't be a failure. You couldn't convince them in the one way that we've been told every free agent will just follow the money. You couldn't put a number to make him hold his nose for 10 years when he walks into the stink of Philadelphia and just play the game, you know, maybe win a World Series or two. You couldn't convince him. Like that is to me a failure, even with all the improvements they've made. Unfortunately, you know, they've made a ton of improvements, just unfortunately with this shadow of these giant free agents looming over them. Part of that is just, you know, luck of how the market wound up this year and the state of their rebuild. But part of it is, you know, their own doing. Think about what kind of offseason this would be if we weren't living in a world where John Milton had said that stupid money quote. Would the Phillies have any less scrutiny on them, do you think?
No.
Yeah,
I don't think so.
I guess now we just have a catchphrase to throw back in their face.
Yeah, that's essentially what it is. Yeah.
And Justin, I agree with you. I think it's a failure. Like, for it's like, do they not, they didn't want him enough? They didn't want either of them enough? Like, why don't they want them enough? Like, that's what I would want to know. What was stopping them? Was it just money? Because if it's just money, that's not a good enough reason to not want one of those players enough. When you know putting them on the team could take them to a different level instantly. Like, at the moment he's on the team, they get so much better than they are now. And where they are now is not bad, but it moves them into a different stratosphere. They're actual competitors, and they added just a handful of players this season. They would have added just a few, and they still need, I hope, to add a little bit of pitching. But like, with one move, they could make their team the team to beat. And for them to not want to do that, for them to not want it enough, is just a critical, unforgettable, unforgivable failure.
And that's if they don't get them. We're not saying that that's where they are right now. We're saying, hypothetically speaking, if they come out of this offseason without getting one of those two guys. Yeah, yes. I agree 100%. Listen, we got to step away. We'll take a quick break. Up next, we're going to talk about some stuff Gabe Kapler had said about wanting to control the locker room. Oh my goodness. We'll get into all that coming up here in just a second on Hittin' Season. And we're back with Hittin' Season. One of the things McPhail did talk about in his news conference, guys, was about Gabe Kapler. He was asked about Kapler's finish to the season last year and the controversy that has enveloped him over the last couple of weeks with his and the Dodgers' handling of a couple of different sexual assault incidents with the team back in 2015. McPhail admitted that he didn't think Kapler, what he did when he suggested that they get together for dinner and not reporting any of this incident to the police, was, he said he didn't think it was, quote, a great idea. But overall, he supported Kapler by saying, in my career, I've been in a position of hiring people, general managers, blah, 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 blah. In my entire history, there's never been a hire that was as fully vetted as this one. And all the stuff that was regurgitated again this winter, there was nothing in there that made me think that the vetting was anything but very thorough, very impartial, and very fair. We were very satisfied when we hired him. We're satisfied today. So I'm on him, which is scouting lingo, which means McPhail approves of Kapler. Kapler had some interesting things to say, too, in an article that Ken Rosenthal wrote for The Athletic, where Kapler was saying he wants his players to do more of the policing in the locker room this year. He said, in my opinion, the best way to enforce boundaries is to have players see and identify what isn't acceptable and address those things. In all of the good clubhouses I was in as a player, you put players in place to be on the lookout for things that aren't acceptable. We're going to empower players to have a high bar in that clubhouse. Rhys Hoskins was quoted in the piece. He said, obviously, Kapler's intent is there. He's talking about Kapler's intent is to have a stronger clubhouse this year. He says, it looks good when you say it, to have players police themselves, but you also have to monitor and make sure it's not getting taken advantage of. To an extent, that probably has some sort of influence on the way we played toward the end of the year. We learned it. We learned from it. That's probably why he's saying that. Add some more boundaries, some more attention to detail, and that stuff gets cleaned up. And then Kapler finished off the piece with a quote saying, in a team environment, everyone holds everybody accountable. The idea of boundaries is let's look out for each other. Let's challenge each other to set the highest possible standards as a group. If I'm not doing enough on or holding up my end of the bargain, hold me accountable, hold up an accurate mirror for me. So there's a couple of different things here. I know that in 1993, when Fergusi was in charge, the players really did a lot of the policing themselves. And we know Darren Dalton did a lot of that. He was a strong clubhouse leader. He handled a lot of that stuff himself internally. I think in the 2007 to 2011 run, Chase Utley did not speak a lot, but he led by example. And I think there have been numerous stories where if players weren't doing the right thing, if they weren't showing up on time, if they were lackadaisical, that Utley, they knew they would have to answer to Chase Utley. And so it seems to me, Justin, that that's kind of what Kapler is talking about here. But at the same time, I did note what Hoskins said, that it can be taken advantage of. And, you know, What do you think of Kapler's quotes, how he's framing this, and the idea of giving the players more authority in the locker room to police each other?
Yeah. So there's a couple of things here. First of all, for McPhail to, the way he talked about the story was predictably vague and irritating, dismissive, I guess was the word I was thinking, talking about the story that came out about when Gabe Kapler was the director of player development with the Dodgers, which we talked about on this podcast, and for him to kind of just take it as an opportunity to compliment his own hiring practices was a move, certainly. I guess, what else was he going to say? Like, he was always going to say, you know, something supportive of Gabe Kapler, and he found a way to turn it into something even more positive for the Phillies in general. So again, that's what he was out there to do. And that was kind of dumb. But as far as the accountability, the new accountability in Gabe Kapler's locker room, first of all, it's a hell of a time for him to be stressing accountability among his players in the Phillies locker room. At the same time, I feel like you can't just say that. I mean, what were you just explaining? That in 93, those years we were talking about Darren Dalton, in the years that followed, we were talking about Chase Utley. There's got to be a lightning rod in that locker room to use as your example if you're going to hold people accountable for things. I mean, this is what we learned last year. This winter, about last year, in that Megan Montemiro column about Odubel Herrera, who was like, yeah, you know, without, you know, I'm paraphrasing, but without guys like Freddie Galvis and Andres Blanco, who were these veteran leaders on the team who management loved, and who made sure guys weren't missing meetings and were getting places on time. They left. They were gone. Freddie Galvis was traded. Andres Blanco was released. And after that, there was a lack of leadership in that locker room. And Odubel Herrera kind of, you know, by his own admission, was like, yeah, I didn't. He framed it like he didn't necessarily see it as a bad thing. And
it was nice having those guys riding my ass. And yeah, God.
But clearly, that was something like the way his season went in 2018. Clearly, it was something he was missing. Inconsistency was all over this team. That's a sign of inexperience. But it's also a sign that there's nobody in the locker room who's like, yeah, you got to do this. And like, this is how we do this, even if it's just by doing it. Like we said, leading by example. So just to say that he's giving the it's like Michael Scott announcing that he's bankrupt. Like, you can't just step out and do it. There's some actions that have got to be taken here, and you got to have a Darren Dalton or a Chase Utley in your locker room who's ready to play that role. And I guess we're supposed to believe that that's going to be Rhys Hoskins, and that's fine. But at the same time, I don't know, just announcing that there's going to be more accountability sounds like somebody who I don't know. It just sounds like you're not entirely sure of what that entails or the effort that goes into policing a locker room like that. So, you know, I can't claim to have ever played for a Major League Baseball team to know what goes on in there, but just simply announcing that there's more accountability now is, you know, not everything going great again, I guess.
It almost seems like Rhys knows, like Hoskins actually knows that he alone can't get it done. Like in the piece, he says, he says, I think like with Gabe said with McCutcheon, Robertson, JT, some of those guys that have been around for a while longer, I think that line doesn't get crossed if we have those guys. I think it's an admission that he wants to do it, but he's a baby, you know, in the span of major leaguers, he's just not quite there yet. He can't really tell Odubel Herrera to do anything. He's been there a lot less than Odubel Herrera has. And in a major league locker room, that matters. I think part of the change that Kapler might be talking about among all of his very touchy-feely, like, I'm headed to the mind gym kind of language, you know, is you know, that change, like everyone can police everyone else. We don't have to abide by that type of seniority thing. But in reality, I think the clubhouse is going to need it. It's a hierarchy. Like, regardless of what, no matter what Gabe Kapler says about, you know, the Phillies slogan this year is no longer be bold. That's in the past. It's shoulder to shoulder. And he, you know, he's talking. Yeah. He's talking about, you know, the stuff he's talking about with players, you know, keeping each other accountable is related to that. But like a clubhouse has a hierarchy. Everywhere builds it just the way it is. So he could say whatever he wants. It's still going to work the same way. Rhys Hoskins just said so.
I mean, we can also hear all day about how Andrew McCutchen is great in the locker room. JT Realmuto is great in the locker room. You know, that's great. That's totally believable, especially about McCutchen. That's like the same thing you've heard about him his whole career. And you assume that's part of the reason why the Phillies went out and acquired him. And I think, you know, again, that's another great move by the team. But at the same time, anybody that you're bringing in to hopefully play a role like that has to buy into the culture, has to buy in like what you're doing. It would be great if Jake Arrieta were, and I'm sure he is a leader in some way on the rotation or among the pitchers, just because he's an older veteran. And for a long time, you know, he was just with a lot of younger pitchers coming in and out of the Phillies organization, but he never like took a so outward of a leadership role or you know, never bought so much into Gabe Kapler's clubhouse culture that he became this sort of vocal leader or somebody that we see cited as a great leader by example from 2018. And I'm not even faulting him for that. I'm just saying like, you gotta have that next step of like, all right, I'm here. And I also want to be here. And like, I also want to help. It's not on a veteran player just because he's a veteran player to swoop in and save a clubhouse that he sees as dysfunctional because, you know, he may not want to be here. You know, maybe he's just playing for his next contract. You don't know.
Well, and that was the issue with the clubhouse last year is that some of the veterans that came in at the trade deadline messed up with the clubhouse chemistry. The younger players were put off a little bit by Asdrubal Cabrera and Wilson Ramos and some of these other guys getting playing time over them. And
Great job, Matt Klentak. Well done.
Yeah, it didn't work out.
They all made such a huge difference in the style of play, and they f***ed up the clubhouse. Really excellent job.
Well, at the time, I mean, in hindsight, it was not. I think at the time we were happy that they went out and made some additions.
I'm going to give you the Asdrubal Cabrera acquisition was an at the time scenario. But once by the time we were looking at Jose Bautista out there, this was a pattern that had to stop.
Bautista and even Justin Bohr were
I personally was not thrilled with the Asdrubal Cabrera pickup. I didn't know why the Phillies needed yet another freaking infielder.
Oh yeah, not sexy and easily pulled apart. But I'm thinking more in terms of a 300 hitter being inserted into the lineup at a time when theoretically,
that
would have been a boon.
That was the right
could have found one who didn't play the same position as 9 other guys on the team already. You know, maybe.
Yeah. They wanted to, I mean, Scott Kingery was your shortstop. He was the worst hitter in baseball. You got a guy with an OPS over 800. That was a move I thought worked. That would have worked out. It just didn't. And, you know, that you know, unfortunately happened and was one of the main reasons the team faltered last year. But I do think some of this stuff has to come organically. You know, like you can't force players into being leaders. And so it has to kind of happen in a clubhouse. And because it's such a young clubhouse, Corey Seidman tweeted something earlier today that if the Phillies get Harper, the average age of their starting lineup will be 27.9 years old. It's going to be a young clubhouse anyway. You do have some veterans in there, but they need to want to do it. They need to want to step up and it just to be a natural part of their personality. And frankly, I don't want that pressure on Rhys Hoskins right now. He shouldn't have to be that guy right now. And if McCutchen and Realmuto can do that, great. But, you know, Gabe Kapler still has to be the guy running that clubhouse. And I think he knows that. I don't think he's trying to abdicate responsibility. I think he has been in locker rooms where this is the way successful teams do things, where there's a balance. There's got to be a balance between the players policing themselves and the manager knowing when to step in and, you know, when to lead. And maybe he left things too loosey-goosey last year, and this is his way of trying to be a little bit more of the heavy this year, something we said we wanted from him last year, to be a little bit more critical of players. So, this is all part of the learning process that I think he's going through in his second spring training now, and we'll see if it works. I just think part of it is Why announce it publicly?
He just needs to stop talking about it.
Just go ahead and do it. Tell your players privately, hey, you know, I want you guys to, I want this to be your locker room. And, you know, we have some veterans in here who you can go to. And I want you guys to have the freedom to police yourselves, but this is still my locker room. I'm in charge. But that, I don't know why that needed to be, that needed to be the whole focus of something, why that needed to be out there, because,
you know, what would make this more believable if we were hearing it in the middle of the season and not before the beginning of the season. Right now, it sounds like he's announcing that it's on his to-do list, not that it's something that they've been doing.
Yeah. It sounds forced. It just sounds forced right now. Like, that just has to be the natural way you as a manager run your clubhouse. It sounds like they're trying out different management strategies, like a struggling company institutes some kind of an acronym where they, you know, hustle, intelligence, work and, you know, working for the company, you know, and they have posters all around. Like the Mets had something like that. If you saw on Twitter, the Mets have these big posters everywhere where they have like integrity spelled out with different words that make up the first letter of each word of integrity. That kind of nonsense doesn't work.
Callaway makes me sad.
Yeah, so I hope that's kind of not what this is. And when you announce it like this at the start of a season, like this is what we're going to do, that's kind of the way it comes across. It has to happen organically. I've never played professional sports either, so I mean, I don't know exactly what goes on in a locker room. But to me, intellectually, it doesn't seem as though this is something you can force. And if this is something you do want your players to do, it'd be more effective if the rest of the world didn't know about it. That's kind of where I'm coming from on it. But anyway, let's step away, take one more quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about the Phillies' third base competition. Gabe Kapler said Michael Franco and Scott Kingery are going to be engaged in a battle at third base. And, you know, we agree a lot here on Hittin' Season, but, you know, we're going to ring the bell here a little bit in just a couple of seconds coming up on Hittin' Season. And we're back with Hittin' Season, and one piece of actual real baseball news that did come down on Sunday is we found out that Mike Moustakas is now off the board. The free agent re-signed with the Milwaukee Brewers to a one-year deal. So if the Phillies don't get Manny Machado, it will be a third base competition, according to Gabe Kapler, here in the spring, between Michael Franco and Scott Kingery. Liz is not happy about this, and I'm going to, would you like me to take the, because I don't have a problem with this at all. And I know, Liz, this is something that bugged you and has bugged you since you first heard about it. Would you like to take the first crack at this, or should I?
He's not a third baseman. He's not a third base. Scott Kingery is not a third baseman. What is he? He is a second baseman, and he is a sort of shortstop. He is not a third baseman. Why is he there? Why are they forcing him there? They already have a third baseman. If this was the American League, I don't care. Put anyone anywhere. But Scott Kingery is not a third baseman, and they had so many issues with defense last year. I don't think putting a non-third baseman at third base is the answer. And making him compete with an actual third baseman is a way to insult Michael Franco and make Scott Kingery feel inferior, as he has most likely felt most of last year as he attempted to learn a position he'd never played and doing it at the major league level, as everyone's crapping on him because he got that unnecessary contract extension at the beginning of the season.
All right. So how do you know he can't play third base yet? He hasn't played it enough in order for that to be a known thing just yet. I agree with you that I think he's a second baseman. I don't think he can play third base. I don't think he has the arm, but I think the important thing to stress there is think. And I think the spring is the perfect time to find out about whether or not a player can do a thing or not. I mean,
sure. Say he's going to spend some reps at third base. Say he's going to get some time there. Don't say, we're going to have these two players fight to the death.
They're not saying they're going to fight to the death. They're saying it's a competition.
Whoever, and frankly, loses is on the bench. Think about it this way. They have made it so Scott Kingery can play a bunch of positions. Whether he can actually do that or not is up in the air. But they think he can. Michael Franco plays third base. If he doesn't win this fight, what happens to him?
Well, they trade him probably, and they probably trade him for not a whole lot. But I don't think Michael Franco is going to lose this job. I don't think he's. I think
well,
this is
why
because I think
like it's I think, so stupid.
I think this is more a way to motivate Michael Franco, who frankly I don't think deserves to be have the job handed to him as an incumbent. I don't think he has played a ton of. He had a very nice stretch for about 6 weeks during last season where he was a very good hitter. But that to me is not enough to say, okay, the job is yours. I do think they are trying to figure out a way to utilize Scott Kingery because if they get Bryce Harper, there's not going to be any reps in the outfield for him. He's probably not going to play a whole lot at second base or shortstop with Gene Segura there. So this is probably the one spot where he could play. I agree. It seems to me they're trying to force Scott Kingery a little bit, but I am not of the opinion that third base is Michael Franco's job.
I don't think that's what they'd be saying by not having him compete with Scott Kingery at camp. If you want to light a fire under his ass, then go out there and acquire Chase Headley or Danny Valencia and say that there's an open competition at third base. I think you're right, John. I think that's the same reason you do that. But at that same time, you got to take that a little more seriously than saying, all right, this second baseman who we tried to get to play shortstop and was the worst player in baseball is now going to be your competition at third base, Michael. How much of a fire do you think that's really lighting under his ass?
It's just insulting. Like, it's just insulting, or he thinks they're all stupid. Like, why is the same thing about Gabe Kapler, you know, just taking the podium and announcing, I have decreed that everyone is going to keep everyone else accountable in the clubhouse. And also, here's some more completely unnecessary information that we don't need. There is information we want to hear from him, but there is stuff that we don't need to hear. I feel like he talks just to hear himself speak in front of the media sometimes. Just stop talking, especially about this.
See, I think I'm not upset. I just can't get upset about this. I think Scott Kingery deserves a chance to see if he can play third base. I don't know that he can't, you know, I just don't think you can say he can't play third base and that he can't be a better third baseman than Michael Franco. Michael Franco has no range whatsoever at third base. He's got a good arm, but he has absolutely zero range at third base. And how many different swing machinations do we have to watch Michael Franco go through before we realize this guy's not going to be a consistent hitter? You know, well, he's got a leg kick now. Okay. That's not going to unlock anything with him. I just see a guy who has brief stretches where he gets ridiculously hot and then falters. And I don't think you can just look at Scott Kingery's 2017 season or 2018 season and just say, well, that's, you know, it's you know, playing shortstop is also a lot different than third base. With playing shortstop, you got to move around a lot more. You got to make a ton of different throws. You got to worry about being the cutoff man. You got to worry about the pivot at second base you got to worry about covering second when there's stolen bases. Third base is a reactionary position. Your mind doesn't have to do nearly as much at third base as it has to do at shortstop. You have to react and throw. The only thing that Kingery has to worry about is, can he make the throw to first base? And I haven't seen him at third base enough to know that he can't. So I don't think trying to learn third base
at second, he couldn't make the throws at short. He wasn't known as a strong arm second baseman because you don't necessarily need it over there,
right?
I guess we don't know definitively if he could be a better third baseman than Michael Franco, who has been a third baseman in the majors for 4 years. He came up as a third baseman. The Phillies have signed other dudes and never made him compete before. Like, this is, if they wanted to be serious about it, they could have signed someone and done it. This is like a combination of not being serious about it and just trying to make themselves look good as they continue to figure out what the hell they're going to do with Scott Kingery, who is on a $9 million. What? I don't remember how much it is per year. The number 9 million is sticking in my head, but like, he signed an extension and they're paying him and they have nowhere to put him. And they're not willing to make any moves. To put him, yeah, to do it. Like, if they're going to put him at third, then put him at third. Just commit, whether or not he could play it or not. Just say, we're putting him at third, we're trading Michael Franco, and then just do it. Just, you know, fish or cut bait or get off the pot, as my mother would say.
Now that I've convinced myself while you were talking that the Phillies are not, they're obviously not going to get Manny Machado and they're not going to do anything else. They're just going to see who is the best third baseman on the team. And they're making it be, you know, a contest between their third baseman and a guy who maybe could play third base. And then whoever loses this contest, maybe that's how they get traded. Because, again, there's plenty of guys on this team left who are still going to be traded, you would assume. At least one more, given the kind of players they want to acquire and the players they still have. So I don't know if it was a contest to trim the fat a little bit. Suddenly I'm on board because I want to see less players on this team who don't have a job.
I guess I just don't see the emotional effect that this would have on Michael Franco or Scott Kingery. I think Scott Kingery and Michael Franco, I don't think having Michael Franco compete for a job where he in his career hasn't proven to, in my opinion, be worthy of being handed anything at this point. And, you know, Kingery's making $1.5 million this year. It's certainly a deal. You know, it would more look bad if they didn't try to figure out a way to get him playing time. And your argument, I do agree with. I believe they're trying to force playing time here because they don't have anywhere to put him right now. They haven't been able to move Cesar Hernandez. And I think that would not at all surprise me if at midseason they tried to move Cesar, but if they're in the playoff hunt, you know, they're talking about using Cesar at leadoff, you're probably not moving him. So, you know, we're going to disagree on this because I see what you're saying, but I don't feel as though it's enough. I'm not all that concerned about Michael Franco's feelings on this, if I could be blunt about it. That's kind of where I am on it.
I think of it more in terms, less about his feelings and just more in terms of like, this was the guy if this is the guy we're potentially sticking with, the results of this contest may change that. But if this is the guy we're sticking with right now at third base, and we're trying to build off of the only real prolonged success he's had in his entire career, I don't know. There's scenarios where I can see it being worth it and others where it's like, all right. But at the same time, I'm not worried about his feelings either. Because I'm with you, John, on that. I don't think he should have the job handed to him, but I don't think that's what's going on or that that's what would be going on if they were just letting him be the third baseman. I think it's just because he's on the roster and he's their third baseman at this point. And eventually they got to make a decision on him. And maybe this helps move that decision along. I don't know.
Yeah. They're just buying time because this doesn't make sense. I think my main issue with it is that it doesn't really make sense to me. Why do it? There's no, it's the thing that I hated last year. They don't want to make a decision about anyone lest they miss out. And that's why I was so shocked that they got rid of both Alfaro and Sixto Sanchez, because it seems like they have been terrified to make a decision about any player that might have a future, lest they get laughed at for missing out. Now, that's just my take on it, considering how sensitive they were reported to have been about the Carlos Santana talks and how they didn't want to look bad. So I could just be making some inferences here, but they just don't seem that they don't want to part with anybody who has any kind of regular job right now. They don't want to make a decision, and eventually they're going to have to make a decision and go one way or another. And I just want them to do it because being in this limbo is bad for the team. I don't think it's a good idea. I think it really hurt things last year in the early going.
Well, agree to disagree on this. I do think I agree with your last point there. I think that the sooner they're able to kind of trim the fat here and get rid of some of the guys and make a decision and, you know, get off the pot on some of these guys and move Scott Kingery into the position he really should be playing, which is second base, the better off everybody will be. And I think right now maybe it is just trying to buy some time until they decide what to do with Michael Franco or Cesar Hernandez or Scott Kingery or something. So just kind of have to see how things play. And frankly, spring training is generally speaking not a long enough of a sample size, and you're not facing good enough pitching to really know whether or not you should be making a decision for the entire season based on that number of games. Because ironically, the two players that have been performing the best over these last two springs are Michael Franco and Scott Kingery. Both routinely have tremendous spring trainings with the Phillies. And so if history is our guide, both guys are going to play their minds out in spring training. You probably still won't have a tough decision to make.
I'm sure they'll definitely make it north.
Oh yeah.
I'm sure somebody's getting kicked off the bus on the way back north. Yeah.
No doubt. Well, listen, we're going to wrap up episode 259 right here. We still have some other stuff to get to. We're going to talk about some quotes Rob Manfred made today about the labor stuff going on and the free agency in the offseason and all that kind of stuff. That stuff is going to be exclusive for our Patreon members. We're going to continue the conversation here in just a second. So at some point on Monday, make sure you check out the Hittin' Season Patreon over at patreon.com/hittin'season, and you'll have a little bonus material from the three of us there. In the meantime, guys, Justin, any final thoughts before we wrap up here on episode 259?
No, I don't.
Liz, I assume the same for you.
I actually do have a quick thing. I think everybody might remember that Major League Baseball has changed their on-field cap providers. They're going with New Era. I think it's a new contract. New Era is closing a plant in upstate New York to accommodate Major League Baseball, who requires all of their caps to be made in the United States. And so while New Era has moved all of their production facilities overseas, the exception is their MLB on-field cap, you know, facility, which they're now moving from New York to Florida to a non-union shop. So I'll be tweeting about this in the coming days. You can go to neweraHatsOff.com for more information. Look into this, put all of your New Era hats in a box and yell about it on the internet, because that's dumb. They want to put all these skilled workers out of a job. They've had a plant there for a long time. And they're taking advantage of Florida's much lax union-hating laws to put together a cheaper on-field product so the owners can all make more money. This is wrong and bad, so look into it. Speak out. NewEraHatsOff.com.
All right, Liz, thanks so much. And hey, folks, again, don't forget to subscribe to the Hittin' Season and the Good Fight podcast feed, where you will get this podcast as well as Continued Success and the Dirty Inning. Again, subscribe, rate, and review the Good Fight podcast feed. That would help out the podcast tremendously as well. And that will do it for episode number 259. Again, make sure to check out patreon.com/hittin'season again for our continuing conversation that we're going to do here in just a couple seconds, talking about Rob Manfred. Again, patreon.com/hittin'season for all that. Thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to y'all next time right here on Hittin' Season.